At the end of last year, Keith Richards put out his autobiography, but for the bulk of 2010, the Rolling Stones revisited 1972 with the re-release of Exile on Main Street. There is a documentary about that album that came out. And the concert film from that year's tour was released, Ladies and Gentlemen, The Rolling Stones. And one of the film's producers, Steve Gebhardt, is currently living in Cincinnati, and he's here to share some insights about that film and the time. Steve, thanks for being here with us.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Now, let's just start off with, how did you get involved in that project? What did you do beforehand to get chosen to do this movie with the Rolling Stones?
Well, in my case, it wasn't some sort of interview thing, but rather the fact that I was working for John Lennon and Yoko Ono at that time. I had been since shortly a month or two after I moved to New York. I started with them in December of 1970. And in 1972, when this Stones Exile on Main Street tour took place in America, I was working for them. However, they happened to be in California, John and Yoko that was, dealing with basically drug issues. They weren't in New York, but I was working for them, working on a film called 10 for 2. I had helped a filmmaker named Danny Seymour deal with some footage he had of John Lennon and Yoko Ono, a film he called Ono, which was shot at his loft on the Bowery when I was shooting the film Fly for Yoko Ono. And I helped him basically in the technical end of editing film, not any other more elaborate purpose, but he remembered that I had done a film shoot with multiple cameras and got them all synchronized to one another. No big deal. He remembered that I had helped him and recommended me when in 1972, he and Robert Frank were about to go out, continue work with the Rolling Stones as they went out on tour. And he gave my name to Marshall Chess, who was the manager of the Rolling Stones at that time, son of Leonard Chess of Chess Records. But Marshall was managing, if you can call it that, the Rolling Stones. So he called me and asked me if I would be interested in shooting the thing. Of course, I said yes. John and Yoko were away for some months. So this was going to take less than a week to shoot, and I would be responsible for shooting with the multiple cameras, go to Kansas City, but then shoot in Fort Worth, Texas, and then again in Houston. Two shows each day, a total of four shows. They were on tour with Stevie Wonder and the Dorothy Norwood Singers. I filmed all of that as well. Much different shooting for those people. In fact, I never used any of that footage of the other acts. I just used the Rolling Stones footage. My idea was to shoot a concert. That's what they hired me to do. But to shoot an aggregate of four concerts and boil it down, in my estimation, into one concert that replicated the experience of seeing the Rolling Stones on stage. In other words, no narration, just simply the experience of being at the Rolling Stones concert in those places.
And that was a crucial time for the Stones because they had a bad start to the 1970s with their West Coast concert, and they had a lot on the line with this new album. And of course, Mick Taylor, who we get to see in the movie, he soon was to leave. Exile on Main Street was going to be one of their big, big, very important albums. Was all that kind of weighing in on what you got to see on stage and put in the movie?
No, they did a very tightly rehearsed act and basically did the same set every night. But in those four concerts that I shot, they threw in a few pieces that didn't make it, that weren't repeated, one-offers. Those, while they didn't make it, gave me an insight into the creative process of those guys, because there was this tight schedule of what they did, tightly choreographed, and anybody that sees it sees that immediately. And Mick has these moves down and parades around the stage with hats and whatnot doing his act and makes the band work. I mean, visually, makes a concert work. I mean, just playing a guitar as Mick Taylor did or Keith Richards does as the underpinning of the Stones sound is not visually that informative from the back of a hall. It's really a little much to lean that much on that kind of performance when, in fact, Mick is the center of attention. That's what he's meant to be. It was up to us to figure out what he's going to do with only a few opportunities to do so. You had to try to get it right each time, the first time, because you never knew how the audio was going to turn out. I mean, this was not the way it is today. But we went there with four cameras. We were hired to use three, but we went with four cameras and had a fifth as a backup. Houston was 100 degrees outside, and the hall we were in, the Allfinds Arena, apparently drew too much power off the grid. And the next thing I knew was that the cameras were slowing down because the draw of current, they were getting less than 110 volts. They were getting 80-some. That circumstance, and I was all hooked into the line, to the plug in the wall by the camera, and that caused my cameras to want to quit. They'd overheat. The film would change speed ever so much. They have a certain tendency, if they get down too low on power, they quit. And that was what we were fighting against, and had to get a second backup camera that was running off a crystal and a battery up and running to cover our back end. That was just the environment that we were facing. It was like a flood.
You talk about all those little problems in filming it, but there were also technical hurdles in actually showing the movie. Now, this is a couple of years later. It was a massive undertaking in getting that film into theaters and being heard properly at the theaters.
It was the audio issue. Basically, it's got to do with what you can hear off of an old-time optical, monaural optical track. And that really means that you don't hear anything near the highs of an electric guitar. I mean, the overtones, you go flying up there into over 10,000 cycles per second, or the low bass notes. You don't hear those because they aren't replicated. It's above 80 cycles and up to 8,000, I think. Somewhere in that range is what you get cycles per second out of an optical 35-millimeter track. We mix this down into quadraphonic. What is quadraphonic? It's four channels, four corners of the hall replicating the sound. That required us to go to print on magnetic striped track. And there are four tracks on that. And we did that, and it was mixed to go to the four corners of a hall. That's hard, but we managed to develop a playback that, if you brought the speakers and the board to a hall, you could adjust it to the characteristics of the hall. If it had a balcony, if it was one floor, you could create an environment that replicated that magnetic soundtrack. Now, each print was much more expensive to buy, and that was done. One of the problems is, with multiple screenings, the track, the applied oxide track, has a tendency to chip off. Thus, you lose a channel each time something chips off, or if the projectionist somehow breaks the print, tears the print, and you put a splice in it, you got a noisy bump. So it's not really simple. But when we did that, it was an amazing sound, because you were able to replicate the amplitude in addition to the qualities of hearing them. Funny thing to play them back, but it's much different if you're playing back a symphony orchestra, because it doesn't want to be played back at 125 decibels. megahertz. I mean, it's just, it's a different thing doing that. We rose to the occasion, but the fact of the matter is that we did it sort of less than a year, moments before Dolby was released. And had we released it in optical four-track Dolby sound, it could have been playing until today. But we did a technology that immediately died, and that was using that quadraphonic magnetic stripe. It may have been stupid, but this sort of thing happens because technology makes a big change for the better, and you're enabled. If you can't sign up with that, then it doesn't do you any good. So we sat in a vault for 35 years until I got enough courage to go back and resurrect those materials and actually put out this thing that was done on video. It's not a print anymore. It's a digital video file. Big file, but it looks great.
Looks great and sounds great. I mean, with all the restoration that you went through and you talked about that, why did it take so long? Why 35 years? It went away. There were some bootlegs here and there, but why last year did suddenly all the stars get together and the film is out on DVD now?
Well, I think it was just a result of bringing out Exile on Main Street. And this was part of the materials with Exile. And it took 35 years for Mick to get around to recognizing that Exile was a good album. I mean, of course, he performed songs from Exile in the Stones concerts. I mean, they must know. But that was a period, as you mentioned at the beginning, that was a period when the Rolling Stones were in a bit of upheaval. Mick Taylor was about to leave after this Exile experience. And essentially, he went to play with Carla Bley and Jack Bruce, completely across town. But he went on to play with them in the Carl Bley Band that also had Bruce Gary in it on drums, formerly the Knack. And that was ironic because here the guy, the characters, the cast of these shows I've been doing appearing in other people's, in others of that group's work. And I just watched a couple of things on YouTube of Mick Taylor, Jack Bruce, Carl Bley, and Bruce Gary playing on the old gray whistle stop from back then.
Now, on the DVD, Mick Jagger says it's a good thing this film is finally out. What are you hearing from today's viewers? What are you hearing from people who have watched the DVD, not having seen it before, or what kind of response are you getting?
I'm not who they call, and I don't really know what to think of it. I went to New Orleans and watched it with some friends of mine. The concert played beautifully, but they had all the materials. They didn't have to go to any big deal to do this, but they were attentive enough that in watching it, I know the film by heart, of course. I've watched it hundreds and hundreds of times over making it and shooting it and editing on it and all of that business and doing the blow-up. I've seen the thing forever. I don't see it often, and I can say it's like much, much better than the bootlegs that are played out there. And you have to take that as a reality. I mean, if the only way that you can see your own film is to get a bootleg of it from somebody, not buy it, fortunately, I wouldn't do that. But to just acquire one from the bootleg world, this is much better, this process they went through. Maybe they were sitting there thinking that, gee, if we don't do this, these bootlegs look better and better. If somebody gets a good soundtrack, they could outsell us, and let's get that money. I mean, I think they were trying to get the money. I don't get any of that money. I suppose they do out of screening it in 530 theaters around the country at the same time each night, one night only.
We're talking with Steve Gephardt, who is one of the producers of the recently re-released Ladies and Gentlemen, the Rolling Stones. Thanks very much for talking with us, and thanks for really 90 minutes of just great rock and roll from the Rolling Stones from way back when. And so one last question. We're going to play a little bit from the soundtrack. What song from the film would you like to go out on?
I'd say Midnight Rambler, because it's the most mystical of the bunch of songs they did. But I think if you just pick any of those, there are five or six songs that Can't Always Get What You Want is a good one. Tumbling Dice is good. It was a great opportunity to do something that I think is very special part in recording history, rock and roll, and just American culture, which is the Rolling Stones, Ladies and Gentlemen, the Rolling Stones, or Exile on Main Street. It was a phenomenal experience to work on that stuff.
Well, thanks very much for speaking with us. Steve Gephardt, one of the producers of Ladies and Gentlemen, the Rolling Stones. And for Around Cincinnati, I'm Frank Johnson.
Just a